And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy!
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds!
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to Football and Grits, the Athletics SEC football podcast. Folks, it's a special signing day crossover episode. If you're a Football and Grits loyalist, you're used to hearing me on Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday during the season when we do daily. And you're used to hearing Aaron Suttles on Tuesday. You've never heard us together until this moment. The Marvel Cinematic Universe has nothing on us. Aaron Suttles, welcome. My co-host for today. Let's talk some Cruton. ABC, always be Cruton. How's signing day for you?
You know, Alabama had most of the hay in the barn. They added two guys. You know, just a ho-hum day at Alabama, adding two top 50 players nationally to what was already maybe one of the greatest recruiting classes point-wise, team rankings-wise we'd ever seen. So they just went ahead and added a five-star running back from Texas and a top 50 safety from Florida. So
as one does.
Yeah, just an average sort of chill day for Alabama. I mean, what Nick Saban's doing is insane. I mean, we've run it's to the point where you're numb to all the accomplishments of it because the list goes on and on. It makes you numb. It loses meaning almost. The fact that they've been number one for so many years in a row, the fact that they win so many national championships, the fact that their staff gets rated every single year, and it does not matter because he just goes and recruits his tail off and beats everybody.
Yeah, we should talk about the leaked recruiting video, which I've been praying for that recruit for about a week or two, hoping that he was not murdered in his sleep. And like, that was like unbelievable. I need to know the full story behind exactly what happened there. I was here's my thing on the leaked recruiting video, though. If I am a coach and I'm doing all these Zoom things, I'm strategically leaking, not leaking, but like giving recruits video that they like of your tightest, like most PR friendly pitch, giving them video so they can watch it or show it to their families or whatever, and then quote unquote maybe post it on social media, because I don't believe that's illegal if you're just giving recruits a video, and eventually it's going to get out, because that particular video looked very, very good for Alabama, even though I'm sure Nick Saban did not want that out. But, you know, your piece at The Athletic in the wake of signing day, you hit on so many of the things that could have or should have derailed the Saban dynasty. None of them have. Most people believe Nick Saban is the best coach ever, and yet, you know, is he underrated? I feel like somehow we still don't appreciate just how impossible this all is in recruiting, on the field, just the relentlessness of this program in every respect. It's impossible.
Yeah, you know, I wrote a big sort of, after they won the national championship, I sort of wrapped the year up in one, and you start ticking off all the accomplishments. That's why I said it makes you numb to them, because there's just so many, they lose meaning. Like, right? I mean, if you have a favorite pizza place and you eat one slice, it's amazing. But if you gorge yourself on it, the last piece didn't taste as good as the first piece, because it's just, you've just had so much of it. That's sort of what it's like. I mean, Nick Saban's had so much success. The accolades are incredible, that when you start listing them off, it just becomes a list of numbers. And you sort of lose context, perspective of what all it's done. It's truly, you know, covering it on the ground floor where you're sort of in it every day. You also lose sort of the 30,000 foot view of it as well. But, you know, the funny part yesterday, it was Terrion Arnold, the safety from Florida, choosing between Alabama and Florida and Georgia, all great programs. And he chooses Alabama, and I just for fun, I clicked on someone's tweet about it just to see what people were saying. And the consensus was, outside of Alabama fans, is that Nick Saban is ruining college football. And I kind of get that. Like the sort of hoarding of talent from among maybe six programs. I can understand if you're a fan, like if you're a fan in Knoxville and you've just seen your roster raided, guys are leaving for Oklahoma and they're entering the transfer portal, and you got a new coach, so your class isn't that good, and you just saw the difference between the programs on the field last year. If you're looking at the chasm between Tennessee's roster and Alabama's roster, it almost looks like a different sport. So I could understand if you're a program chasing Alabama or chasing the college football playoff and you see the hoarding of talent among four or five programs, maybe six, unless you just really enjoy tailgating, if once we get back to that, you're not chasing championships, I can understand why the argument's made that college football isn't as fun maybe it was 20, 30 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I remember I wrote a piece for Sports on Earth a few years back when UConn women's basketball was at their peak. And there was a lot of debate over, whether or not they were good or bad for the sport. And, did sexism play a role in all this? And it was an interesting conversation. But I'm in the same place with Alabama football. I don't think it's good for the sport. That's not to lessen what Alabama has done. But there's a lot of people who agree. I think when you're talking about Alabama, and to a lesser degree Clemson, really kind of like you're saying, it's those four or five or six programs that are really the only teams that realistically are going to be making the playoff every single year. It sort of defeats the any given Saturday ethos of college football in some ways when. Yes, we've always seen the best programs rise to the top, but for one program like this, especially for a decade, to really only play three or four games every year where they can kind of realistically lose, and it's really becoming more so like that since the Tua year started, since I guess it would be 18, so the last three seasons, we've seen that really amplify. It's, when you're turning on the TV and watching, Alabama beat the team that finished the fifth in the country last year by four touchdowns. You're kind of like, I don't know. How do Alabama fans, like living in the ecosystem and kind of around that, how do they view that argument? Is it just sort of a haters gonna hate situation, or is it, do they have some respect of that while laughing about it?
I think, like all fans, there's some that they get sensitive about it and think that Alabama's being picked on. That if it was another program, like say for instance Clemson, who Alabama fans kind of view as their equal in terms of, Alabama fans have a lot of respect for Clemson because of what Clemson's done, how they've competed against Alabama. They've sort of viewed Clemson in the same way, and they don't think the narrative around Clemson is the same. So that always gets pointed out, and they would counter with, well, if it was another program, we're not hearing this argument that it's bad for the sport, but because it's Alabama, I think the difference here. Is you remember how good those mid-1990s Nebraska teams were? Like, mm-hmm. They're just – I mean, Lawrence Phillips is running all over Florida, a really good Florida team in the national championship game. It's like Alabama's that, but as you mentioned, it's lasted more than a decade now. And I always,
since, like, what, 09, I guess we would say, 12 years?
Since Saban's second year at 08, they went unbeaten up, and they lost a great SEC championship game to Florida. But since mm-hmm. that time, I mean, you're talking about since 2008 – I want you to go back and look at what the internet looked like in 2008. I mean, everything is different. It's the fact that, and I always use this argument, Americans love success. We love success stories. We get obsessed with it. But then we get, if it sustains success, we get tired of it, right? I mean, it's like, it's why you root for the underdog. Like, in 2001, people wanted the Patriots to beat the Rams because the Rams were the greatest show on turf. They're running up and down. People wanted this plucky underdog led by this quarterback no one's ever heard of, Tom Brady, to beat.
Sixth round pick?
To beat.
He's not going
to
be good.
The greatest show on turf. And then they did, but then the Patriots went on the greatest dynasty in the history of the NFL, and people hate the Patriots. It's the same way. We love success, but sustained success, we start to hate.
Yeah, I think there's definitely a big part of that. And I think... you may be right. It's not about Alabama specifically as much as sort of the joylessness of it, it feels like. I think Nick Saban says it a lot of like, this program's not for everyone. We go to work, we do all these things, and that's a big part of their success. a hashtag trust the process, all of that. But I think that is part of it. The lack of joy that seems to, you know, Nick Saban wins a title, you know, shoots another Aflac commercial the next morning, and then he's calling 2023 recruits. Right. Like, that's kind of what it is. And it's not, you know, it helps now because they were playing, not only were they joyless for much of this decade run, but they played a joyless brand of just, like, chokehold football. Now it's a lot more fun. Like, 18, 19, those were, I enjoyed watching those Alabama teams. This year I enjoyed watching this team, but we've kind of, now you've said, we've kind of seen it. But I think that's part of it, too, of sort of like, you know, your program becomes the face, and Nick Saban, for all of his success and for all of the things that he does, and maybe it's fair, maybe it's not. I'm not inside the program. I've seen a lot of Alabama. But his perception and his public persona is not one of fun. And I think that taps into some of why people are sick of Alabama, too.
Yeah, I think he would be well served. And I think he's lightened up a little bit with age, you know, smiling a little more. I think he did enjoy this particular team a lot.
Yeah, that post game, it seemed a little different this year.
But I think inside the program, people would tell you he's a little different. He's still Nick Saban, but he's a little different. He has more fun than people think he has. But with the media, for some reason, he doesn't allow it. Like, I'll give you an example. So before the national championship game, I wrote a piece about Alabama's 2017 recruiting class and just the absurd amount of talent in it. I mean, that had Tua and Jedrick Wills and all those wideouts. And so I wrote that, and I asked him, and I knew what he was going to say, but because he doesn't have expectations, right? Like, you can sign the greatest high school player ever, and Alabama doesn't have any expectations that he's going to be great in college. That's just sort of Nick Saban's spiel. But looking back on it, I think it's fine to reflect, yeah, there were a lot of good players in that class. So I asked him, you know, at the time, did you get a sense of how good this class was? And he just gave some, like, he could have had fun with that answer, right? I mean, think about all the NFL players that were in that class, and he could have had fun with it and kind of looked back over that class's accomplishment. Instead, he goes, well, you answered your own question. I don't have expectations for these players. I mean, and like, stuff like that where you could probably have a little fun and sort of, I mean, you don't have to revel in the success, but you can highlight a couple of things that class has done. That's another thing, too. Nick Saban likes to pretend he doesn't know. Ask him where his team's rank, he'll say, I don't know. He famously said he didn't know. He famously said he didn't know that one day that a U.S. national election was going on. Of course,
I recall
he knows
that. Yes,
he always. But for some reason, he thinks it's cool to show he's so locked in that he doesn't know. But if you've noticed on that Zoom recruiting call, he noticed every little detail. How many, you know, of all the accomplishments they had, all the national championship games they played in, how many national championships they won. Of course, he knows all those details, but for some reason, he doesn't like to say it in front of the media. He likes to pretend he doesn't know, and I think that plays into this old curmudgeon that he plays on TV.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Yeah, I think, you know, yesterday, I don't know what to make of the signing day situation right now, because early signing day comes in, I guess it was December of 17, so 3-4 years ago, we have early signing period, and that, no one really knew what to expect. I remember how unpredictable that was, and then all of a sudden, like 80% of the guys are in the barn, and now that the transfer portal is a thing, and you're having immediate eligibility, not official, but looking close to imminent. Recruiting classes are pretty much done in December. You might add a few guys late, But the focus for a lot of schools is saving those spots for transfer portal, since you can only bring in 25 guys, and you get really muted signing days. Tennessee didn't even have a signing day press conference yesterday, in part because they introduced their coach like a week ago. But they only signed two guys, a JUCO guy and a grad transfer. So it was a weird day, but I look around and I see Texas A&M sneaking up a little bit. You know, Georgia had so much heat a few years ago. Well, I guess it was coming off of the national championship appearance. I'm curious if the Aggies might be the second best program in the league right now. I think Georgia still has more talent. They still are a better roster, and we'll see what happens with them at their quarterback spot. The Aggies have got to replace Kellen Mond. But if Georgia has another kind of meh season relative to talent, those questions get louder. But ultimately, my biggest takeaway yesterday is that Jimbo's doing what he got paid $75 million to do. And it seems to me that it's probably only going to be a matter of time before they're knocking on the door, and certainly at this point look like the main challengers to Alabama in the West. Now, what does that look like? Last year it looked like a 28-point loss. It might look like that in some years. You know, we'll see what happens with them in the quarterback spot, if Haynes King becomes the guy that they hoped he was. But the Aggies were the team that jumped off the page at me yesterday.
They've always been probably the biggest example of a sleeping giant. And mm-hmm. Sleeping giant is relative.
Explain why they weren't better.
Yeah, and sleeping giant is relative. They've had success, but given their resources, given their proximity to talent, I mean, they are truly a sleeping giant. And we saw them knocking on the door last year, the college football playoff. What's really interesting to me is you can make an argument that they are going to be fighting with Georgia for that sort of status. The main difference is they reside in the division with Alabama and LSU, while, you know, Georgia sort of has to play a sometimes hit or miss Florida team, and really that's about it. There's not really many challengers there in the East. So another thing,
you sound
is,
like you're not sold on Tennessee.
Yeah. we'll see what Heupel does. You know, I do think they have a built-in advantage in their schedule, whereas as opposed to their other competitors in the West, Alabama has the biggest advantage, right? They get to play Tennessee as their non-permanent or as their permanent cross-division rival. That's until Tennessee comes back. That program's, as you know, David, in disarray. But
some call that an advantage for Alabama. Some call it an anchor for Tennessee.
but LSU's got to play Florida every year. Yeah. Auburn's got to play Georgia every year. So. And Texas A&M sort of has an advantage with Alabama that they get their permanent cross division rivals is South Carolina, which is to the level of some of those other programs. So Jimbo Fisher's always been a great recruiter, man. I mean, there's a reason things went sideways in Tallahassee, and there's probably a great oral history to be written on his last days in Florida State, how that mm-hmm. went. But I think he grabbed a lot of people's attention this year with that defensive line they had. You know, they had a veteran quarterback, and they were really, I mean, one slip up there, and they're in the college football playoffs. So yeah. I think they're in great position. I'm fascinated, and David, I know you are too, because of your history covering that conference, of what happens, the dynamic with now Sark and that recruiting staff he put together at Texas. I think there's going to be some fun recruiting battles in the future between the Aggies and the Longhorns.
I think you're definitely right. Texas is a complicated recruiting state. It's a lot more complicated than it was even 10 years ago. The Aggies' entrance into the SEC is a big part of that. I think you wrote about Alabama's crashing Texas recently, right? Was that like this week?
David, they got 7 blue chip recruits from Texas. Alabama. Yeah. That's insane.
I think that's A&M, the idea for them, I think, was that you know, by leaving for the SEC, they could sell different things and start out recruiting Texas. But I don't think – I think we underestimated how much the Aggies coming to Texas – or coming to the SEC was going to open up the floodgates for LSU and Alabama, for other schools to come in there. Because before they left, when they were still in the Big 12 and you still had – you know, that was a pretty hard eastern border. You know, sometimes schools would pop in, like Ohio State and Alabama and like the bit in Oregon, and when they were popping, the big programs would steal some guys sometimes, but it was still Aggies, Longhorns, Sooners. Those are, if you're the best kid in Texas, you're going to one of those three schools. And that's what it was, and that's not that anymore.
LSU's always done a pretty good job because, you know, being somewhat border to Texas. But mm-hmm. for Alabama to go get seven guys, and the biggest example to me is one, JoJo Earl. Just Alabama had a needed receiver, and they just absolutely cleaned up at wide receiver in this class. But Kamara Wheaton, I don't know if people have noticed, Alabama's loaded at running back. Just absolutely loaded. And Brian Robinson's probably going to take advantage of the NCAA free year. So, I mean, that running back room is crowded. And then a five-star running back from Texas chooses to go to Alabama. It's just, I think, as you mentioned, it, you know, when A&M entered the league in 2012, it opened Texas up because now teams in the SEC can go recruit there. And it's coincided with Texas not being the Texas it could be.
Yeah.
And Alabama's played neutral site games there. They've played college football playoff games there. They've played bowl games there. So they've been very visible in the state of Texas. They signed Ahsan Robinson. I mean, they've had one player from Texas in every class since A&M entered the league. But they've never had seven, and it jumped off the page this year. I mean, I think Alabama had 14 of its 27 players came from Texas or Florida, and if you follow high school recruiting, there are really good players in Texas and Florida.
Mm-hmm. You know, you look around the SEC as well. You know, obviously, I cover Tennessee. I do pay quite a bit of attention to the league. You look at the bottom, you see new coaches. You see Brian Harsin with a borderline top 50 class. You see Shane Beamer at South Carolina. I believe they were 76th behind Coach Prime at Jackson State. yeah. Tennessee, though, hangs on. They grab the number 16 spot. There's probably some jostling that may happen as more guys sign. But for now, they're in there. They were, you know, people forget this class was number 2 in the country at one point. Those were numbers were sort of inflated, but I believe at that time Alabama was barely a top 50 class. I think they got a little bit of a late start this year. Ended up okay for them. But Tennessee got that hot start. You know, you get Dylan Brooks, you get Terrence Lewis, and then sort of the domino started to fall. And then they don't have either of those guys now. Well, they'll wait on Dylan Brooks, probably going to release him from his letter of intent. But the early signing period probably saved the Vols this year because they were not really – I mean, you're firing a coach late in the process. It's tough to really recruit. But the new coaches, you know, these transition classes are just harder than ever. When you had the February signing day and just that, it was easier to kind of scrounge some things up. You grab some kids from the old school that you came from. You can still maybe flip some guys that maybe fit you a little bit better. You do a hard sell, especially if you'd kind of known them a little bit at a previous class. But I think that rebuilding jobs in the era of the early signing period are only going to get harder. And these transition classes, our colleague Max Olson looked at those first transition classes when the early signing period happened. They're not great, and there's a bajillion different reasons for that. Sometimes those guys are not fits. Sometimes those guys don't have great relationships with the coach. I mean, a lot of times you sign, and then a new coach comes in after you sign. You don't really have a relationship with that guy. Some of those guys transfer. The attrition rate was relatively high at a bunch of different places. And, the early signing period is interesting, I think, for a lot of reasons. One, it happens during a holiday week. The season's still happening, so people that aren't covering recruiting every single day in college football, you know, in February, everything was recruiting. But in December, there's still a lot of other stuff going on. Recruiting's kind of just another thing, and I feel like the hoopla of signing day now, when it's buried in December, I'm not sure we're ever going to see, you know, the Isaiah Crowell pulling out a puppy, these, like, legendary signing day moments. We just don't see as many of those anymore because people aren't watching.
Yeah, it's not a day set off to itself anymore like it used to be. I mean, honestly, here in the state of Alabama, I know multiple people, and you probably do too, were the passionate, diehard college football fans that would take the day off work for that Wednesday in February to
ESPNU all day.
Yeah, and you remember when Alabama had the fax cam girl, and it was just they made a show of it, and it was some anticipation. Well, now, I mean, there's
you're preparing for a playoff.
Yeah, there's a lot of different reasons why, you know, it's sort of lost steam. Players are making videos now and releasing them, and they're recruiting. They're sort of committing earlier and earlier because of that early signing period. A lot of the players, not the top guys, but a lot of players feel like if I don't commit now, I may not have a spot. by the second signing period. I mean, Alabama was, I mean, they signed two guys in the traditional national signing day. And you talk about those transitional classes. I mean, it happens to the best. Nick Saban's first Alabama class was not very good. And a lot of different reasons. You had relationships with assistant coaches that are no longer there or head coaches that are no longer there. So, and because of their sort of where we are, I mean, the fact that Auburn, as you mentioned, is ranked where it's ranked and Tennessee's ranked where it's ranked, but had the benefit of locking up at the majority of its class. Remember when Tennessee, did you feel like that was coordinated? Remember that during the summer when they're just getting they had a 2 or 3 week run where they were just loading up on recruits. It
I can tell you that it was coordinated.
Yeah, it feels weird to go back a year, or not even a year, but Tennessee wins its first two games. What, they'd won 8 games in a row. They have one of the top recruiting classes in the country. It really felt like Tennessee had momentum, and then man, it just rocked.
I didn't think they were gonna like crash through the, you know, this year, but it certainly felt like they're moving in the right direction. But no, I talked to some recruits, you know, when they were having that run this summer when they got up to number 2, and it was very much a thing. Like, they would say, okay, guys would make their decision weeks before, and then they'd say, okay, you announce your commitment on Monday, I'm going to do Wednesday, I'm going to do Thursday, I'm going to do Friday, and you keep that going rather than like 6 guys on one day. Not only does each day that kid sort of gets his shine, but it helps the program because it's like, okay, another one. Oh, another one. Oh, another one. And then all of a sudden, you know, DJ Khaled is your recruiting coordinator. And it's a great, you know, it's a great strategy. The problem is when your coach gets fired and a bunch of guys leave, it feels kind of hollow. But Tennessee had it going this summer. And, you know, I always say college football is a what have you done for me lately sport. And that has never been more true than right now.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a 1-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
I tell you, what has not done anything for me lately until this week, Aaron Suttles, that is EA Sports, NCAA football franchise.
It's in the game.
Listen. I think we know with name, image, likeness, it was really going to be complicated. It still is a little complicated to get all the ducks in a row. But when name, image, likeness now looks imminent, it was kind of a matter of time. Before that was happening, it was kind of like there was not a lot of hope for NCAA to come back. This week, we got the announcement. It's still going to be probably a couple years, but it's back. NCAA football, I've been over the moon all week just thinking about this.
It takes me back to college, man. You back to college and those leagues you're in with your buddies. You know, I was sitting there. We have a son. He's 3 months old. So we were riding to go get some stuff that you need for a baby. And I was sitting in the back with him, and I got real quiet for about 10 minutes. And my wife finally says, "What's going on with you? Why aren't you talking?" I said, "You don't understand. College football is coming back." She goes, "What do you mean?" I'm like, no. EA Sports college football is coming back. And then she's like, she's basically called me a nerd and kept driving. But I was surprised that like normally with stuff like this it leaks out. Like the fact that they were the ones that announced it, and then just how it took over your timeline. And that's another thing I told my wife. I'm like, there are a few things, a great college football game or any sporting event, a great live sporting event, or something that galvanizes a community within Twitter that makes Twitter really fun. And that was a yeah. fun Twitter day.
I mean, it was.
A lot of times Twitter's absolute garbage and you have to deal with the worst
most
of
humanity of the time,
on
almost
it.
All the time.
But if you get a great live sporting event that everyone's watching, Twitter is an incredible experience. And if there's a great like news announcement, Twitter's an incredible viewing experience. And that's what Twitter was that day, because you're just watching people and you're chiming in and you're joining in the conversation and you're like reflecting back to when you played the game. I'm with you. I'm over the moon about it. I can't wait. My wife's even debating letting me get the next gen gaming system for it. So I can't wait, man.
Our staff was like, I say fighting with quotation marks, fighting in Slack about who is going to get to write what about NCAA, because it was like, we could have written 50 pieces this week about NCAA. We ended up doing a roundtable that was probably too long. It could have gone for 20,000 words if we really wanted to. And then our boy Ari Wasserman wrote about what the recruiting should look like in the game. Nicole Auerbach, always good from a national perspective, wrote about kind of the NIL ramifications of this, what that's probably going to look like, kind of how we got to this point. And it's been complicated because the Ed O'Bannon lawsuit, he was 100% right. And the game died for reasons that were certainly moral. But I still missed the game. Players missed the game. Guys wanted to be in the game.
Well, I've never understood
the legal
why
risks were too great.
And this is what we're going to get late, maybe in the early incarnations of this game. But they could have still made the game. I mean, with just random numbers and random rosters that you didn't purposely set out to make look like Mac Jones or Najee Harris. I mean, they could have done that, but I understand why it went away. And you're right. I mean, those players are being taken advantage of in that way.
Yeah.
And so whatever form, if it's, you know, schools finally get on board with name, image, and likeness and players are getting cut of it at some point, or if it's totally random rosters. The problem is someone's going to make a roster that resembles college football at some point.
Yeah. It's I think that's the idea, is that, you know, I'd like to see players get a free game. I'd like to see players get a cut. I mean, it's not going to be a ton of money because there's so many players, but I'd like to see that. But I remember back in the day, you know, that's why when Ed O'Bannon, you know, sort of made the foundational argument for name, image, likeness in video games, I mean, he absolutely was 100% right. It was very clear who those guys were. And it would get pretty intense, too, because I remember back in the day, I'm going to date myself here, but what I used to do was there were people on eBay that, first of all, eBay instead of Amazon, but there's people who would create the rosters. It would take them about 2 weeks to do it once the game came out, but you could mail them a memory card of yours.
That's right. I remember
that. And they would copy over the rosters, and they would send it back to you, or you could buy a new memory card. And for years, I did that. Once the internet started happening, you know, you could just download the rosters on some of the later games, once like the PS2 started becoming more connective and all that stuff. I guess that was 360. That was the Xbox. But those early years, it was about making the game what the game was supposed to be and having those names. And I never started my dynasties until I had the names. I was waiting and have those rosters. And they didn't have to change much. They just had to change the names. Like the attributes were always pretty about right. And you know, guys would want to play as themselves. And so here's hoping that we can go back to those days, not having to have bootleg memory cards and players getting a cut of it. But I'm so excited.
Which program that you missed during that span where there was no game, do you think you missed playing with the most? Like that you missed out playing with? Like, was it Manziel? Was it Texas A&M having Johnny Manziel? And
yeah, I think a really bad version of Johnny Manziel is on the very last game, I think. I think it was the year before. I forget. Maybe there was a good version of him. I forget exactly. I don't remember. He was on the game, but he was never like,
right. He wasn't
all
Johnny
caps
Football.
Johnny Football. There was never that version of the guy on the game. So his relationship is a little complicated. That A&M team would have been pretty fun. The one with, you know, him and Mike Evans and those teams that were like elite.
I saw that team up close. They were good.
Yeah. I'd have to say, you know, I said this week, Lamar Jackson would have been maybe the most polarized. I mean, he's already kind of polarizing in Madden as is, but on NCAA, I said he would have had the power to end decades old friendships because of how good he would have been on that game. And
stop spreading the quarterback out every time.
For real. Like, so, you know, because I've seen guys that they would move a receiver in at quarterback that had like 95 speed and they just run read option to death. And now that I've played the game a little more and you know, I would be able to stop that. But in 2005, 2006, we hadn't really seen that in college football a ton, and it felt like cheating in the game until teams started doing it in real life. You were sort of lost. And those were interesting times. But, yeah, some of those teams, you know, I don't know that there's one specific team, because usually I tried to fit a team every year that kind of fit what I wanted to do and the personnel that I liked and kind of what I wanted. I usually try to be – I was pretty balanced. But I'm just excited because, you know, the NFL games and Madden – I like the NFL, but every offense is kind of the same. And the diversity of college football and scheme and approach and – all of those things, and I'm very much looking forward to sideline turnover celebration as being a part of the game, the Oregon State chainsaw, the SMU sideline bottle service. I'm very excited because those have to be in the game. All of those things that make college football just completely insane, you know, as EA Sports would say, if it's in the game, it's in the game.
Yeah,
so it hasn't been in the game in a while.
Changes in college football in itself, you know, the RPOs,
mm-hmm.
they'll be reflected in the playbooks. And is the transfer portal is that a thing now in the game? I'm just excited that maybe a new generation of video gamers get to experience the game because it has a cult following. I mean, when I worked for a newspaper, the Tuscaloosa News, there was a yearly story where I would have to go to GameStop the day that NCAA football was released. It was sort of like another mark on the calendar that let you know college football was getting closer. You know, the preseason magazines drop and EA Sports video game came out. It was like every year there was such a cult following of that game because people love college football, and then it just went away, and then sort of the mythology of that game just got more popular and more popular. And then this week gave it the pop it popped when they tweeted that they're coming back.
Yeah, my birthday is July 11th, and that game always used to come out right in that week. And, you know, it would always get me through until preseason camp started and things got a little more real. But I think one thing that also about the game that I hadn't really thought about that really I think is a thing is it helped a lot of people, like, learn about different players and different teams. Like, some of the, you know, if there's a stud running back on New Mexico, you might not know about him in real life, but on the game, you're like, oh, I remember that guy in that game. You know, this gets sort of into the name, image, and likeness issues again. But, like, you'd see this guy, and maybe you play him in non-conference or something, and, you know, he runs up 175 yards for you, and then you see him in real life. I think a lot of people learned about teams and players through the game. You see that in FIFA and Madden and younger fans, kids that, like, develop their favorite players based on the video game. And I think you're going to see that in NCAA. I think it's going to help the popularity of the sport. You know, for all the nerds like us, I very much plan on getting that the first day. I said they should have taken pre-orders this week because even though the game is a bajillion years out, I would have put down $50. Absolutely. No question. So I'm just very excited. It's been a good week for college
football.
Think about
how many college relationships are going to be ruined because of this. like girlfriends breaking up with their boyfriends because they won't stop. I mean, it was already bad enough with Fortnite and Call of Duty, but it's going to ruin a lot of relationships.
As signing day has died, EA Sports, NCAA football will live. It's the circle of life. Thank you guys for tuning in to a special crossover offseason episode of Football and Grits. I am your host, David Ubbin. Joined for the first time, hopefully not the last time, by Aaron Suttles. If you guys are not subscribed to the show, you can get this episode delivered directly to your device if you do that. Whatever podcast purveyor you choose, get that immediately as soon as it's posted. And You don't have to come search us out. It comes right to you. If you're not a subscriber to The Athletic, where you can read Aaron's work on Alabama, myself on Tennessee, our great staff, Stu Mandel, Aaron's Andy Staples, Bruce Feldman, Nicole Auerbach, Chris Vanini, Max Olson, all our folks that cover you from a national perspective, you can do that. TheAthletic.com/grits. We've always got great deals going on. Thank you guys for tuning in. Leave us a review, a rating, and subscribe to the show and The Athletic. Again, for Aaron Suttles, I'm David Ubbin. We'll see you again very, very soon.